Always an interesting Sunday when the time changes as to how many people will remember, how many people will not. What we've noticed is when it changes in the spring, that we're always minus some people at the early part of services. When it changes in the fall, we've got some people that are here an hour early. I would assume that's probably a little preferable than them being missing, but we certainly probably have some that have forgotten to change their time clocks. We're sorry for that, that they can't spend this time with us this morning. We hope to see them a little bit later this morning. I want you to turn in your Bibles to Acts chapter 5, if you would, for just a moment. Acts chapter 5. So that we might be able to examine just a single verse out of this chapter, because we're not really as interested in the exegesis or the breaking down of this whole section of Scripture as we are the kind of the hidden lesson that is in the intent in a statement that is made in Acts chapter 5 that we'll read in just a moment. I don't know if there have been times that maybe you have found something in your plate of food that you didn't expect. I know that's happened to a lot of us. You look down and there's maybe a hair on your food, and so you toss that food out. Typically, most of us do, but we're not real comfortable with just removing it and eating, so we throw it away. But that's because of some foreign substance or something in there that we didn't expect. Can you imagine that you're in a situation where you consider yourself to be of such value that you are a different value than a lot of the people that are around you, so much so that there is such a disparity of your worth or value to those who are around you, that if somebody of that lower value should happen to walk by while you were eating, and they walked between the light and you and cast a shadow on you, can you imagine what would it take for you to be in a position where you'd say, you know what? That outcast of society has cast a shadow on my plate. I must throw my food away. And that just sounds bizarre to us, does it not? That seems to be something, hopefully, that for any of us would be appalling, that we would think that there is somebody that is beneath us to a degree that would allow their shadow to contaminate our food where I couldn't possibly eat the food. But that's exactly the case with the class system that existed at one time and still exists to a large degree in India, where if you were a high caste Brahmin and one of those who was considered the lower caste or the outcast of society would walk by and you were eating your food and their shadow was cast across your plate, you would discard the entire plate of food. You couldn't eat it. The feeling was that they had so influenced the food and had cast their lack of value on that food that you couldn't possibly eat it. That just seems unimaginable to us. But by the same token, there were those who also felt that when Gandhi was teaching and walking around, that if you should be able to get into the shadow of Gandhi, that you would be greatly blessed by that. That just walking into the shadow. Think about that. I mean, as you look at your shadow when you're outside, what is the value of a shadow? You ever think about that? What's the value of it? What's the purpose of it? A couple of things come to mind for me. One is physics class that I took, where we had to figure out how tall a tree was based on the angle of the sun to the tree and the length of the shadow. Still not a lot of worth to me. Not saying there are probably people who use that kind of mathematical equation now that are greatly benefited by that. But that's not doing me any good now. So the shadow didn't seem of great value. I play a little bit of golf. And never is a shadow a beneficial thing. Either somebody else's shadow is in your way, or sometimes if you're on a green and you're putting and your own shadow is in your way. I don't ever think in terms of a shadow having value. Somebody wrote a poem years ago. Small poem, just read this way. I have a little shadow that goes in and out with me. What can be the use of him is more than I can see. That's probably the way most of us would feel about shadows. There's just It's just nothingness on a sunny day. There's not really anything to it. So little is there to the idea of a shadow that the Bible uses that terminology when it's talking about the Old Testament and the relationship with Jesus Christ, or with God in the Old Testament, putting forth a picture to say that those were a shadow. Those weren't the real substance. The real substance was going to come through Jesus Christ. And so the things like the tabernacle and the temple were just a shadow of the good things to come. That they gave a slight picture, but kind of looking down at your shadow, you get an outline shape, but you really don't understand in any great detail. But we all cast shadows, and in more ways than one. I want you to look at Acts chapter 5, because as superstitious as we would say that is to take the view of those who are in India, that either casting out your food because an outcast cast that shadow, or feeling particularly blessed because somebody that was of great nobility went by and cast a shadow on you, we'd say that's very superstitious. But in Acts chapter 5, that's exactly the kind of thing that happens. In Acts chapter 5, and starting in verse 12, it says, "And through the hands of the apostles, many signs and wonders were done among the people, and they were all in one accord in Solomon's porch," talking about at the temple. "Yet none of the rest dared join them, but the people esteemed them highly. And believers were increasingly added to the Lord, multitudes of both men and women." So it says the apostles were doing incredible things. And sometimes there's a part of us that wishes we could have been there and seen some of those things, isn't there? I mean, to see some of the things that they were doing, the healings that they were performing, and the casting out of demons that they were performing, and some of the great things that they were able to accomplish, it would just be sometimes we think wonderful to witness that. Well, so the people that are witnessing that, verse 15 describes them, says, "So that they brought the sick out into the streets and laid them on beds and couches, that at least the shadow of Peter passing by might fall on some of them." So that's exactly the point. He's saying they were bringing out sick people on their beds or their chairs or the couches, their pallets, whatever you wanted to have them on, and they would lay them. They couldn't necessarily get to Peter, but in a similar fashion that the way some people today want to just reach out and kind of touch somebody that's famous to have that contact, they were laying these people on the ground, hoping that when Peter walked by, that his shadow cast across them, because they thought that they would be healed by the shadow of Peter. But it wasn't Peter himself, but it was the far-reaching influence of Peter, wasn't it? And that's the nature of the shadow. I want us to just take a moment this morning to think about the shadow that we cast. Think about what that means to cast a shadow. What it means to have an influence on those that are around us. The effect that we have on others. How many people do we come in contact with daily? I just preached a meeting in Auburn, Alabama. They have 140 college students in that congregation. That's a lot of college students. And I asked them one evening, how many people attend the University of Auburn? A little over 25,000 at the University of Auburn. And so I asked these kids, how many people you come in contact with on a daily basis? You ever think about that? Not how many do you know, not how many do you have friendship with, not how many are you close to. How many people on a daily basis see us or we have contact with? And that's a lot when you're in school. That's less in some stages of life because maybe we work in an environment where there's only three or four people around us, and that's the bulk of the people we see in a day. But think about when you're in school, high school or junior high school or college, the amount of people you come in contact with. The high school I went to had 2,500 people. I came in contact with the majority of those on a daily basis. Didn't know a lot of them. Didn't spend time with a lot of them, but they saw me. I saw them. They heard me. I heard them. We have an influence on others. You cannot keep from casting a shadow physically, nor can you keep from casting a shadow in a spiritual sense, the influence we have on others. It's no different than throwing a rock into the pond. You could sit there all day doing an experiment and say, well, I'm going to throw one of these rocks and not create ripples. Going to happen? It can't happen. We know that. You throw the rock and the ripples start. That's just automatic. That's the truth with life and a shadow as well. We're here. I'm saying we're alive. We don't get a choice as to whether or not we have an influence. We only get a choice as to what we do with the influence that we have. And that doesn't matter what age we are. We're influencing somebody. You can't put a person into any sphere of life and them not cast a shadow or have some kind of influence on people around them. When Ralph Walker and I were in high school, one of the favorite things we used to do was go to the Florida State Fair every year that it came. And we loved the fair for multiple reasons. One reason was there's more food on a stick and fried food than you can find anywhere else at a fair. So we indulged in the delicacies of the Florida State Fair. One of the other things we like to do is just kind of see how we could affect the people around us. And the Florida State Fair was set up this way. You had all of your exhibits out off in the perimeter. In the center of the fairgrounds, you had what they called the midway. And in the midway, all those food booths went right down the center of the midway. And you had rides and different exhibits on each side. And at that time, the Florida State Fair just had the single lane of, or the single midway. And you could walk up one side and back down the other side and see all the things or do the rides before you went out to the exhibits. We used to walk down. It's just dirt. It wasn't anything paved or anything like that. So you're walking down through the dirt. We would walk down, and we just got a kick out of doing different things. And so we would designate at a certain point, we'd say, you know what, when you get exactly next to the corn dog stand, step over a rope. And so we'd be walking down the aisle. We'd go, and then keep walking. Get down about another booth and turn around and watch how many people behind you who have no idea who you are get to that same location, and they're going, moving with their, trying to figure out what it was that we stepped over. But it's interesting because they don't know you. They've never seen you before. But it shows the impact that we have in life. We would do that, or we would point. We love to get two or three of us into one location and just point and then turn and talk to each other a little bit and keep pointing. And somebody else would point a little bit off of where you was pointing. You'd say, you'd tell them no, and you'd point over here. And then watch the amount of people that will gather around you and try and figure out what you're looking at. They're all looking up, and you're not looking at anything. It just shows that whether we think people are influenced or not, they are influenced by the things that they see in us, by the things that they hear in us. And there's just four things that I want us to understand about the idea of influence this morning and why it is such an impact in life and why we need to understand that we will make some kind of impact. In John chapter 21, after Jesus has died and is now resurrected, and he's going to make an appearance to the disciples. You remember, as a matter of fact, Jesus is going to cook them breakfast in John chapter 21. They're out in a boat, but they're out in a boat because they're all just sitting around together. It names off numerous of the apostles, says they're all just sitting there together, and Peter says, "Hey guys, I'm going fishing." And what happens? All the others said, "Hey, we're going fishing too." Has that ever happened to you? You're just kind of sitting around and one person makes a suggestion, everybody kind of jumps on board with it. That's the nature of this influence. Four things that I want you to remember this morning about the nature of influence. Influence is always positive. Now just let that one sink in for just a second. That does not mean you always have a positive influence. What it means is there is no such thing as neutrality of influence. Influence always has an effect. The effect may be positive or negative, depending on what it is we do or what it is that we say. But the influence is always generated. In other words, you can't have a neutral influence. There's no such thing as people saw me and it had zero effect at all, whether it changes their thoughts or whether they do anything different. Influence always exerts itself. Does that make sense when I say it's always positive? It's not always positive influence. It's just that there is no such thing as neutral influence. Very similar to the statement that Jesus made in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 30 when he was saying, you have to understand that we're in a world that just sometimes likes to kind of sit in the middle. We like the idea of abstaining from making a decision. I remember when our three sons were going through the process of trying to determine when they would or if they would turn their lives over to Christ. in obedience to Him. As they went through that on numerous occasions, I would have discussions with them, and I would say, "What have you decided?" And they said, "I haven't decided anything yet." That was a typical response, to which I always replied, "Yes, you have. You've either decided not to do it at this time, or you've decided to do it at this time. There is no not deciding. That's not even a possibility with choice. Whatever it is, I decide." And Jesus said in Matthew chapter 12, that there is nobody that is ambivalent toward me. That's not the wording He put it in. He said, "You are either for me or against me. He who is not for me is against me." People will say, "You know what? I really don't have an opinion about this at all." And Jesus is saying, you may not think you do, but you do. Either you're on my side or you are against me. That's the only two choices, He says, that exist. And that's what I think we need to understand about our influence, that it is that way. There is no way not to influence. The things that I said in school and the things that I did in school influenced people that I didn't even know that it influenced. People influenced me that some of them know they influenced me because they were close and they tried. Some people influenced me that never even knew that they influenced me. It is always positive in that sense. Secondly, influence is mostly unconscious. Mostly. Not always. We do things to intentionally influence people. But I would tell you that there are more people that we don't know see us and hear us than people that we intentionally are trying to tell something or influence. Even as I dealt with my children, there was a lot of influence that was intentional. I assure you, there was a lot of influence that was non-intentional. I love the one boy who was talking about driving. His dad's teaching him to drive. And as he's driving, another driver pulls out in front of him and kind of cuts him off. And the boy shakes his fist at the driver and yells at him and says something, calls him some kind of name, and immediately turns to his dad and says, "Did I do that right?" Dad didn't try to influence him that way, but he did. We've talked about before one of my favorite commercials from years gone by. And I mention it again. I know most of you have heard it, but I just thought it was so impressive when the commercial the Latter-day Saints did with the little boy washing the car with his dad. Do you remember that one? Pick up the sponge just like dad. Pick up the hose just like dad. They get the car all washed and rinsed off, and dad goes and sits down by a tree and pulls out a pack of cigarettes and taps them on his hand and puts one in his mouth, sets the pack of cigarettes down. He's not looking at the sun, but what do you think the sun does? But the whole point was they're watching us all the time. Most of it is unconscious. And you can wield intentional influence. We do that with our children. We do that with others. But we need to also understand that short, intentional bursts of influence will never overcome a lifetime of unintentional influence. Why is it critical that we live the way that God asks us to live? Is because the influence that we have on people around us is unintentional, and they will see that, they will respond to that, and you can try as you might to try to correct that in those short bursts, but it very seldom will happen that way. Thirdly, influence is almost always immortal, or nearly immortal. I wish there are things that I had said or done that had their little bit of influence and that was it and it was done, but it just doesn't seem to work that way, does it? It's kind of like that rock in the pond again. You throw that rock out in the pond and the ripples start and they just keep moving out farther and farther. How many people are influenced by somebody that was influenced by somebody that they didn't even know that they influenced? I mean, how far-reaching is it, the nature of it? It has a lasting quality. It just keeps going on longer and longer and longer. It is such a powerful concept that it is the method that Jesus chose to reach the world with the gospel. Think about that. Remember Satan saying, "Hey, Why don't you do some great thing like throwing yourself off the pinnacle of the temple and huge crowds will see it all at once and they'll react." or Satan saying, why don't you bow down to me and I'll give you all the kingdoms of the world. We live in a time of mass communication, and sometimes we wonder, why didn't Jesus come at a time of mass communication so that with the gospel message he could reach everybody at one time? The way that we can almost accomplish that today. You can reach literally billions of people within minutes today with the mass communication technology we have. But Jesus came and took a group of men to his side and taught them what he wanted them to teach and left them to turn the world upside down. Because influence is that powerful of a tool and that far-reaching. And so those, what started as 12 and went down to 11 and then others added on again, started reaching out. And what happened? People started hearing. And they started hearing in other countries. They started hearing thousands of miles away from where the gospel started. Why? Because one person told one, who told another, who told another. Jesus understood, if I can change these lives right here, it can reach out farther than you could possibly imagine. I was talking this morning with Misty. She was talking about a congregation where they were that was military related. I was at a congregation like that in Florida, MacDill Avenue. And one of the things that was a frustration with that was it just seemed like every time you got a family that was strong and growing and was helping you, and they were teaching, and they were helping reach the lost, and they were serving members, and they were leading singing and helping out with other things. You got these people and you thought, what a great family. They are such a source of strength to us. And Uncle Sam said, see you later. We're sending them down the road somewhere else. That was just very typical. And that was a very frustrating thing. Because now comes in another family that kind of starts that whole process over. And I was there for a little while before I ever realized what an incredible gift that was from God. That he was saying, if I give you people for just a little while and you understand that you can have an influence on somebody and then they're going out into the world to have an influence on somebody else, what a wonderful concept is that? Rather than looking at that thinking, this is so frustrating, why can't we have it a different situation? God was saying, here's the situation you have. You can have an influence in places that a lot of other groups will never be able to reach out to. Because you got people that are traveling the world from where you are. That's the concept. It's almost immortal in the way that it just keeps reaching out and getting longer and longer shadows. That's the nature of that. God says that's the nature of influence. And then fourthly, and finally, it's almost always irrevocable. Once exerted, very difficult to change, virtually impossible to recall. I wish that wasn't the case, but we've all been there, have we not? Open mouth, insert foot. Only to as soon as you get the foot in, think, wish I could take that back. But you can't. Doesn't mean you can't do what you can to repair it. God expects us to do what we can to repair. But the influence that we have. I did things when I was in high school and in college that were as ungodly as they could possibly be. That was just the nature of the life that I was choosing at that time. Those people that I knew, I've tried after that time to let them know about my life changing. And some of them I've bumped into and have gone to some reunions and explained some of those things. But I realize there are people that saw and heard things from me that have never known that I've ever changed my life. And I have no idea what effect it had on them. Now, God doesn't want me to dwell on the past. I can't live back there. I've been forgiven. God has taken care of all of that. But I understand and why it's important to try to get my children to understand when we were raising them, everything you say, everything you do has an impact. It changes people's lives. And I can't do anything but pray that if I had a bad influence on some people that somebody else has come into their life to help them see things in a better fashion. But because I can't pull that back. As much as I'd like to pull back some of the things I said, some of the things I did, can't do it. Think about that. You can change almost every other aspect of life. Almost every other aspect, but you can't change an influence that was out there. The best we can hope for is to be like the Medes and the Persians and the laws that they had. You remember the story of Esther? Medes and the Persians had a law that said once a law was put into place, you could not revoke the law. You couldn't revoke it, period. It was law, and it was law forever in the kingdom of the Persians. Couldn't revoke it. And so you remember a man by the name of Haman, a man by the name of Haman that was a great enemy to the Jews during Esther's time, got a law passed that they were able to go out and annihilate the Jews, the Persians. Could just wipe them out. The king was sorry afterwards that he had signed that law. But there wasn't anything really that could be done. The law was the law. Now, in our land, we would hopefully say, you know what, it's a bad law. We can overturn the law. But they had a law that prevented them from overturning it no matter how bad it was. So, they ended up having another law that allowed the Jews to take up arms and fight back, which kind of changed the nature of the first law. They were going to go out and slaughter the Jews during Esther's time, but the Jews were able to fight back, and that was not any longer going to happen. The one law counteracted the other. We can try to do something that will counteract the influence that I had previously, but almost impossible to ever take it back. When we were in Colorado this last year, a whole group of us were out there. We were in Garden of the Gods in Colorado City. First time I'd ever been there. Great, great place. While we were there, we noticed a plume of smoke from a little distance off. And as you looked at that smoke, it literally, you know, as you kind of hold your hands up, you know, when you're looking at the size of things that are in the distance, you could hold your fingers up, and it looked like it was about 3/4 of an inch wide, that plume of smoke. So you thought, it doesn't look like a real big fire. About 15 minutes later, from the same location, you're holding your hand like this. We went to eat lunch in Manitou Springs, which is just outside that area. And we were in Manitou Springs. You could see the flames jumping up over the hills from the trees. Incredible flames in this fire. And now it looks like it is numerous yards wide. Virtually the same location. After we ate lunch, we were heading toward Estes Park. They were evacuating Garden of the Gods, evacuating Pikes Peak, evacuating Manitou Springs, everything in the area, the Air Force Academy, all that was around there was in danger of being influenced by this fire. By the time we were driving by it on interstate, if you had held your hands up, it looked like the fire was now a mile or a mile and a half wide. And it was. You ever seen a brush fire like that or a forest fire like that? That it moves with such rapidity that it is almost impossible to stop. That fire consumed some 300 houses in a matter of minutes. That's the nature of influence. God says, be careful with your influence because it's like a brush fire. Good or bad. Good or bad. It's like a brush fire. Cannot really be stopped with any great effectiveness. It's always going to influence, always positive in that sense. It's almost always unconscious. It is nearly immortal in how far it reaches, and it's almost always irrevocable. Is your shadow important? It is. How I live my life is greatly important. Have you chosen to live for Jesus Christ? I mean, here's the great part of that story. It's not that you still might not have had bad influence, but we serve a God that says it doesn't matter what you've done or how bad it was or how terrible your life has been. Forgiveness is available to every single person that wants to come to God. How great is that message? And that's what He wants us to do. Because I can't do anything really about my influence from yesterday backwards at all. But I can do a lot about my influence from today forward if that's what I choose. And there'd be no greater way to have an influence on others than if you've never chosen to follow God, to choose to do that even today. If you know how to do that, if you know what that obedience means, if you'd want to start that relationship with Christ today, we'd love to help you do that. If you don't know how to do that, if you don't know what He asks of you, talk to us. We'd love to open up His Word and show you what He says. Those of us that are Christians, we're in exactly the same boat. All of us have from this moment forward to determine what I'm going to do with my shadow. What kind of shadow will I cast? How long a shadow will I cast? Hope that we would all choose to cast a shadow that does good things in the kingdom of God. We have that opportunity. If we can help you, let us know while we stand, while we sing.